nostalgia hit me as soon as the iconic music started. It was sort of a pleasant ache because so many happy memories came flooding back, but they were mixed with the realization that 40 years had gone by. So it was bittersweet seeing him looking so young on the big screen because I knew life had moved on and neither of us would ever really be that young again. I'm probably the only person who teared up during the opening scene of that movie, but it really just instantly brought me right back to the early 1980s. I grew up in a town called Geneva in New York State. Just like its famous namesake in Switzerland, Geneva sits on a beautiful lake. The town's also home to Hobart and William Smith Colleges, where my father was a professor in the religious studies department, and he specialized in Theravada Buddhism. And it was this interest that led my family on a year-long adventure to Sri Lanka. I have so many amazing memories of that time I spent in that beautiful tropical country. But despite the fact that I met a 100-year-old Buddhist nun who believed I was her reincarnated mother, despite the fact that I was almost trampled by a crowd escaping a urinating elephant, and despite the fact that I witnessed the outbreak of a civil war, it's one rainy evening that I am always asked to recount at dinner parties and family gatherings. I was 10 years old when my parents informed me we'd be spending the next year in Sri Lanka. My father was helping to establish a study abroad program there, and we were to accompany the group of students from a consortium of colleges and then remain after their semester was over so my father could complete a sabbatical studying Buddhist nuns in the country. It was 1982, so there was no internet available to me. All I knew of the country were tidbits I'd overheard from conversations between my parents and my father's colleagues. I knew it was teardrop-shaped, it was an island, it was south of India, it was hot, it was far away from where I lived. So when my mom and dad and my one-year-old sister and I boarded the plane, I wasn't completely sure what to expect. We landed in the capital of Colombo, and by the time the students arrived several weeks later, I felt very comfortable in my new surroundings. I learned to love the food, I grew used to the heat. Okay, the spiders I never really got used to, but everything else, especially the people, I adored. And after a few weeks in the capital and some intense Sinhalese language courses, my family moved along with the students to the central hill country and settled in Kandy for the remainder of our stay. In April 1983, I turned 11, and shortly after that, my school went on recess, and I had almost a month of free time. With two energetic kids at home, my mom was eager to plan some activities that would help my sister and I expend energy, and so she got a temporary pool membership at a local hotel. The Swiss Hotel is one of those old colonial structures that makes you think at any moment ladies with parasols are going to wander into the garden for high tea. And one of the first mornings of our new pool membership, we arrived fairly early. It was already hot, so I jumped right in the water while my mom sat poolside with my sister. There were not that many people in the pool, but the deck was hopping with activity. I noticed a lot of people that looked somehow out of place. Rather than the normally relaxed look of vacationers, there was lots of scurrying around and groups of people huddled together in animated conversation. There was a man setting up folding chairs. The Swiss Hotel had a resident peacock, and I noticed the man with the folding chairs was right where the peacock usually hung out. And just as I was thinking to myself, he should find a different spot, this slender, bearded man exited the hotel and looked around, and the people near the chairs motioned him over. As he passed by, I noticed his baseball cap read E.T. So I went back to playing in the pool, and soon I met a young blonde girl several years younger than I named Jessica. She was from the United States too, so we chatted and raced back and forth and showed off some of our pool skills. We did somersaults and handstands, and we timed each other to see how long we could hold our breath underwater. When I came up from what I was hoping would be my record-breaking time, I was startled by this very large, very scary man standing near the edge of the pool. He was wearing a long, heavy maroon tunic, too long, too heavy for the weather. He had this black turban wrapped around his head, which easily doubled its size, with a striking red streak on one side. Around his neck was a long black scarf, and both eyes were blackened. around the edges, creating these dark voids in his face. He looked so out of place. I couldn't figure out where this guy was from, and he just stood there menacingly with his hands on his hips. Woman with a clipboard came up to him and led him towards the man in the ET hat, and I turned to Jessica and I said, "He is not from around here." She didn't seem fazed by the scary man at all, and just said, "Oh, he's probably just an extra." I didn't have any idea what she was talking about, so she explained the man was likely part of the movie, and went on to tell me that her mom was there for the movie too. When recounting this story, this is the point where some people put together who the man in the baseball cap was, and usually say something like, "Wait, was that the man in the cap? Was, oh my gosh, no way, did you flip out?" And I didn't flip out because I was 11, and the man in the cap was just a grown-up in the corner of the garden annoying my peacock friend. I was just relieved the man with the creepy eyes was wearing a costume. It wasn't a strange hotel guest, and I went back to playing in the pool with Jessica. She was there with this outgoing woman with crazy, curly, strawberry blonde hair, who I immediately adored, named Jamie, who was a friend of Jessica's mom. And we took a break from swimming, and Jamie told us that Jessica would be traveling with her mom while they made the movie that would be filming in Kandy for a while. Jamie told us all they'd be filming in the area for several weeks, and that she and Jessica could really use some company because she didn't think there would be anything for them to do in Kandy. So she asked maybe if I could join them on some of the film shoots so Jessica wouldn't be so bored. So for the next few weeks, I fell into a new routine in Kandy. Jessica and I would go to the movie set in the morning and stay through lunch, and then we'd go back to the pool or my house or go sightseeing around Kandy in the afternoon. But one day, our routine was disrupted because the movie was going to shoot at night. The movie set was located on a small tea plantation on the opposite side of Kandy from my house, and a car could only take you so far. A paved road ended in a dirt road, and then it ended altogether. So to get to the set, you had to climb some fairly steep dirt paths between the tea bushes and other vegetation to get to where the action was. When we climbed the dirt paths to the location that night, we encountered all of our now familiar to us crew members with their smoke machines and their cameras and cables and clipboards and director's chairs. But the atmosphere was a little more laid back than during the day. Jessica and I watched as they filmed this slender boy stagger over a rock and collapse into the arms of the lead actor several times before they broke for dinner. The meal was set up in this cramped building close to where they were shooting. These lights were dangling from cables strewn across the beams in the ceiling, and they were casting shadows on the wall next to the folks queuing for their food. So it looked like there was this second shadowy, ominous, and loud and hot. So after piling our plates, including two brownies, we walked outside and we sat next to the stone structure that's the focal point of the village in the movie. The food was amazing. I had grown to adore Sri Lankan food, but the movie set food always had these familiar comfort foods of home. And this night it was fried chicken, baked beans, and cornbread. I had a lot of great food on that set, but this was by far my favorite meal. Just as we were finishing, we heard a rumble of thunder in the distance. Then suddenly these massive clouds rolled in. Now it was dark already, but the clouds were visible because when they started pouring over the next hill, any light, stars or lights from the Kandy disappeared. And the air changed, and suddenly papers and loose objects around the set began to move and make noise in the increasing wind, followed by giant raindrops, which just came screaming down. And people started racing all around to cover up cameras and equipment. Then suddenly there was a startling flash and a deafening crack that shook the ground. One of those booms that you feel in your gut. And it was evident that lightning had struck pretty close to where we were sheltering. Someone who seemed to be in charge came in and said, "This is not safe. We all need to clear the set immediately." Outside, the rain had already soaked the ground and there were these standing puddles everywhere. As we started down the hill, the muddy paths had become these tiny rushing rivers. And Jessica and her mom were ahead of me. We had to go down single file because the paths were so narrow. As I came around a bend, my narrow footpath led in between two large boulders, and I noticed two thick black cables plugged in with the junction right in the middle of the path. Water was rushing between the rocks right over where these two cables were plugged into each other, and I could hear this slight humming noise. This memory stirred in my head of this cartoon dog from kindergarten with this bright yellow raincoat who had warned us about the dangers of electricity and water. And I realized I could be electrified. It might not be safe to walk in between the rocks, especially I was only wearing flip-flops. I could see the puddle between the rocks was too big to jump over, so I tried to go around the rock to the right, but beyond the boulder, the brush was too thick. Same thing on the left. And I looked at the rocks and weighed my options. My choices were run back up the hill towards the lightning and try to scramble over a wet rock that was taller than me, or risk a potential shock by stepping in the water between the boulders. And just as I was attempting unsuccessfully to climb the rock, I heard someone coming up behind me, and I turned and I saw the outline of his iconic hat. He was dressed as his character, whip and all. He wasn't accompanied by his theme music, but when I remember that night, I always fill it in my head. He quickly assessed the situation and came to the same conclusion that I had and commanded me to climb on. And that's when Harrison Ford, fully costumed as Indiana Jones, hoisted me onto his back. And in his leather jacket, he clambered over the boulder on the left and carried me down the path until we reached the vans, where a soaked Jessica and her mother, his co-star, Kate Capshaw, were just climbing in. And as we all bounced together down the muddy road towards Candy, Kate pointed out that Harrison Ford, movie action star in that moment, had been a real-life hero. In case you hadn't pieced it together, the man in the E.T. hat was Steven Spielberg, who was in Sri Lanka filming Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom. I think one of the most important things we gain as we grow older is a sense of perspective. When I was living in Sri Lanka with my family, I did not really appreciate how unique my reality was. I witnessed dozens of women shaving their heads as they were initiated as Buddhist nuns. I watched an artist pour molten brass into intricate molds at his home. I saw wild elephants playing near the sea and giant fruit bats flying at dusk. And late in my stay, I saw a car flipped on its side by a mob during a riot. And I saw an angry group with torches get talked out of attacking our neighbors by one very brave man. And I had all these experiences, including spending several weeks on the set of Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom. But it wasn't until I looked back at them as an adult that I appreciated how special these adventures were. Last summer, my husband and I took our two girls to see the latest installment of the Indiana Jones franchise. All these memories came instantly flooding back, and I was moved almost to tears as soon as the music started. When the first scene began, there he was, my personal hero, Harrison Ford, as Indiana Jones, digitally transformed back to exactly the man I had met in 1983. I'm 51 now. I'm not a movie star, so I've no one to digitally enhance my appearance, but I can travel back in time in my mind. I still have access to all those Sri Lankan memories and experiences from my childhood, and they've forever shaped my worldview. And of course, I have a pretty great story to tell at dinner parties about the time Indiana Jones saved my life.
We are in Sri Lanka. It's a long way away from home.
Hi, Mom. We're in Sri
Lanka.
Sri Lanka. Not bad. It's good. It's nice. People are great. Friendly.
The back lot has undergone a remarkable change.